And so we need to imagine a situation where it snows in the wintertime. That's not hard. But then it doesn't all melt the following summer. So some of the snow sticks around. And then the next winter it snows again, and the next summer it doesn't all melt away. So every year there's some accumulating snow that stays around into the next winter. And that snow gets thicker and thicker and thicker, and in the process, the light, delicate, fluffy snowflakes gradually pack into ice under their own weight. It's kind of a transition from snowflake to ice pellets, what skiers sometimes call corn snow or fern, and then the ice pellets are gradually compacted together into solid ice. So it's much like if you took a snowball in your hands and just kept pressing and squeezing, and pretty soon your snowball would turn into an ice ball. You're in effect squeezing the air out of it, and this is happening just under the weight of the snow. So we need lots and lots of snowfall year after year after year, building up and packing itself into solid ice. When you look closely at glacial ice, often it has a kind of grainy appearance, especially if you notice in the upper right-hand corner of this photo. Kind of that grainy appearance is from the individual ice crystals that make up the ice of the glacier. Here's a chunk, held up. It's not solid ice, it's still got air bubbles in it. The air bubbles outline some of these ice crystal chunks. So we can kind of think of the glacier as made of many, many ice crystals fused together in the process that made the ice. Now, as the ice gets thicker and thicker and thicker, then it can begin to move under its own weight. And the way that a glacier moves is that those individual ice crystals start to flatten out, again, under the pressure of their own weight, and each ice crystal starts to slip against its neighboring ice crystal a little bit. So the crystals are slipping and sliding against each other, and it doesn't have to move much. Each crystal might move a fraction of a millimeter, but if you take the total effect of all the crystals shifting against each other, that allows the solid ice of the glacier to move across the ground. And that's the essential motion of any glacier, is that it's got a kind of internal flow to it, behaves almost like a plastic in physical sense. It's got an internal flow of ice achieved under great pressure as those crystals slip and slide against each other. The ice tends to flow from higher areas toward lower areas, so it is driven by gravity, much like water flow would be, from where the ice is high toward where the ice is low. And sometimes it can go right up and over little things that get in its way, small mountains, small rocks, things like that. Here's a glacier in Alaska, and the ice is originating up high in the mountains, again, where the heavy snowfall is, and then it's moving down the valley toward the lower elevation. And during the summertime, it experiences some melting. This is on the coast of Alaska. Sometimes the glaciers end right in the ocean. And again, at these lower elevations, it will experience melting. It's not unusual in Alaska to get up into 80, even 90 degree temperatures during the summertime. So on a day like this, the ice would be melting. When it ends in water, also chunks of the glacier break off and float away, which is how icebergs form. An iceberg is just a chunk of a glacier. You can see a little sense of that. Now this, we're back in the Railroad Creek Valley, and this is the Lyman Glacier. So at the very head of Railroad Creek Valley, this is the ultimate source of Railroad Creek. And one of the ways you can tell the ice is moving is that the surface of the glacier has cracks in it, what we refer to as crevasses. Delicate here. This is up on the Lyman Glacier. You can see those crevasses. What happens is that the ice down in the lower part of the glacier that's under pressure is moving, But the ice on the surface is hard and brittle, and it doesn't move. So it just cracks open, and as a result of the ice moving underneath it. So the crevasses are surface phenomena. They extend down maybe 100 feet or so.
Wow.
This again is a crevasse. Very common on the surface of a glacier. This is a view farther back on the Lyman Glacier. Sorry, this is a touchy little remote here. Careful. The ice in the glacier, now let me back up a second. Every winter it snows, and every summer some of the ice melts. Every winter new snow is added, every summer some of the old ice melts away. Every glacier experiences that. The new snow represents the accumulating ice. The melting gets rid of some of the old ice. The accumulation tends to happen on the higher elevations of the glacier. In this case, this is a glacier just a little north of the Railroad Creek Valley called the South Cascade Glacier. It's a black and white photo. The mountain ridge that it originates to is on the top right of the photo. So the snow tends to accumulate at the highest elevations where the temperatures are coolest and the snowfall is heaviest. And then it packs into ice and it flows to the lower elevation where in the summertime it experiences melting. We talked about that already. The glacier divides nicely into two sections, a section of net accumulation and a section of net melting, the accumulation zone and the melting zone. The accumulation zone you can recognize because it's always covered by fresh snow. Even at the end of the summer, there's still fresh snow from the previous winter. That's the snow that sticks around to pack into ice. In the melting zone, all the fresh snow is gone from the previous winter. None of that sticks around. And some of the ice itself is also melting. The ice inside the glacier always flows from the accumulation zone to the melting zone. It's always just flowing one direction like a giant conveyor belt, which usually also is downhill. One of the important relationships in glaciers is this relationship between accumulation and melting. If over a period of time there's more accumulation than melting, if over a bunch of years, maybe a couple decades, there's more accumulation than melting, that means you're adding more ice every year than you lose. Which means physically the glacier is getting bigger. It's occupying more space in the landscape. It's the edge of the glacier is advancing. If on the other hand, over a period of several decades, you lose more ice than you gain, if the melting is greater than the accumulation, then the glacier is getting smaller. And physically it takes up less space, so the margin of the glacier is retreating. It's melting back. The glacier is a climatically driven phenomenon. So when it gets colder, you tend to get more accumulation, and so the glaciers get bigger. When it gets warmer, you tend to get more melting, and the glaciers get smaller. So as our climate gets warmer, we expect the glaciers to get smaller as a result of greater melting. And we'll see some evidence for that as we move along. This is a little glacier up above the Lyman Glacier. Accumulation zone covered with fresh snow, melting zone covered, or just the bare ice. The ice is moving from the accumulation zone to the melting zone of that glacier. This is the Mary Green Glacier up on the side of Bonanza Mountain above Holden Lake. This is a little earlier in the summer, so the zones are less well defined, but you see fresh snow on the upper part of the glacier, and you see ice showing through on the lower part of the glacier. So that's the accumulation zone. This is the melting zone. This is close up of the Mary Green Glacier, right up at the edge of it. Again, in the melting zone, what you see is the ice itself. Bluish color with a lot of sediment on top of it as well from the melting process. You see the crevasses that show through in the melting zone. maybe some patches of fresh snow still remain, but mostly the snow from last winter is gone, and we're just looking at bare ice. But if we get up higher on Bonanza Mountain, then we're on the accumulation zone of this glacier, and it's all covered with fresh snow from the last winter. And this snow isn't going to melt completely. It's going to stay there. It's going to eventually pack into solid ice. So this is up on that accumulation zone of the Mary Green Glacier. There are still crevasses here, but oftentimes they're covered with snow on the surface, and that can make crossing glaciers kind of dangerous. And we're all roped up here as a result of that. In case somebody were to break through and fall in a crevasse, they've already got the rope tied around them in order to pull them back out. Now, to get to this point where the glacier starts moving, it takes about 300 feet of ice minimum. So that's kind of the minimum thickness for a glacier, and most glaciers are quite a bit thicker than that. So this again is the Lyman Glacier, accumulation zone on the upper end, melting zone on the lower end. And the ice inside the Lyman Glacier is flowing from the accumulation zone to the melting zone. And the crevasses result from that movement. So in a quick nutshell, that's how glaciers work. They form from snow, they pack into ice, the ice gets thick enough and the ice starts to move. Any questions up to this point?
All right.
Yep. How long does it take a glacier to really get going?
I'm not sure we have a good sense of that, because most all the glaciers we've got in the world today have been around longer than people have really been paying much attention to it. So we've never seen one start from scratch, so to speak, at least not in scientific lifetime.
How fast do they usually move? Like how much during a year?
That's a good question. Glaciers are pretty slow moving. We typically would measure their rate of motion in meters per year, or maybe tens of meters per year. So you can't sit and watch one. It's going to look like it's sitting there.
Paint will dry faster.
Right, paint dries faster than glaciers move. The way we measure how fast they move is that we go out and we pound a series of wooden stakes across the glacier and survey their location exactly, and then we go away for a couple years and come back and see how much the wooden stakes have moved. And then we've got visual evidence of the moving of that glacier.
To do that, how long are those stakes?
Typically, they don't need to be too long. Maybe they'd be pounded or put into the ice. You probably have to drill a hole in the ice and put the stake in and kind of freeze it in place a foot or so.
Oh.
But then they would stick up a way so you can see them above the snow.
Yeah. I'm
going to have to make a little adjustment back there. My connection is a little bit loose, so I've got to tweak it a little. Sorry.
One wire goes.
I certainly sometimes feel purple, but... Question about whether other glaciers, let me finish the movement question. It is possible for glaciers to move faster. Sometimes they surge. A glacier may build up water underneath the ice and it'll literally float the ice off the ground. And then it can move maybe meters per day or tens of meters per day. Again, almost too slow to see it happen. But you could come back the next day and see how much it had changed. Now, the question was, are all glaciers melting? And the answer basically is yes. We've been in a period of climatic warming, some of that likely due to the effects of human pollution and global warming, the greenhouse effect. Except for a couple of glaciers on coastal Alaska, virtually all the world's glaciers are getting smaller. And to give you a sense of that, this is the Exit Glacier up in Alaska. This is where it was in 1978. Back in the background, is you can see where it was in 1998. So in 20 years, that glacier has moved back that far. And as I say, most of the glaciers are, we certainly see it in the glaciers here around the Railroad Creek Valley, in the the time that I've been watching them, I can tell that they're smaller. All right, let's talk a little bit about how glaciers shape the landscape. And they can accomplish this both through erosion of sediment and deposition of sediment. Now, there are two ways that glaciers predominantly erode the landscape. If you think about ice moving across the surface of rock, it's logical that to figure out that the ice is softer than the rock. So if you try to scratch a rock with an ice cube, it's not going to work. So there have to be some other mechanisms at work here. One way that the glacier accomplishes this erosion is a freezing process. The ice freezes to a rock, and then when the ice keeps moving, it picks up the rock and carries it with it. It literally plucks the rock off the ground. And over time then, the glacier builds up sediment in the bottom of the ice that it's plucked off the ground. This is the Mary Green Glacier, again up by Bonanza. This is right at the edge of the ice, and this is the lower 7 or 8 feet of the ice. Very dirty, lots of rocks in it, embedded in the ice that the glacier has picked up on its way down the mountain. So it gathers sediment as it moves along. Once the sediment is embedded in the bottom of the ice, the glacier drags those sediment particles along the ground, and the glacier starts to act like a giant piece of sandpaper. It starts to scratch away at the rock surface underneath it in kind of abrasion action. So the plucking and the abrasion, the sediment becomes tools for the glacier to use to grind away at the rock underneath it. Here's one way we can see evidence that that happened. These are scratches in the surface of rock caused by the ice flowing over it, but the scratches are actually caused by the rocks embedded in the bottom of the ice. And these scratches all line up in the same direction because that's the direction the ice is flowing across that particular rock surface. See the same thing here. You can see fine parallel scratches in the surface of this rock created as the sediment-rich ice flowed across the rock surface. And we can then tell which way the ice was moving, even if the glacier is long gone. Another example there. This is a rock that was inside a glacier. You can see how gouged up and scratched up the surface of the rock is from being scratched against rocks inside the other rocks inside the glacier and scratched against the ground underneath it. One way we can describe this effect, this grinding effect of the ice, is glacial polish. The ice polishes the rock surface, it smooths it off. So up close to the Mary Green Glacier, this is some of the polished rock surface on the side of Bonanza Mountain. And you can also see scratches here. It's not shiny polished, but it's smoother than you would expect. Yep, you can see the smoother texture. This is the same area, up high above Holden Lake. This surface was covered by ice, and as the ice flowed across it, it smoothed off and polished that rock surface. Now we can start to think about this erosion on a much larger scale. We know glaciers are capable of this erosion process. Imagine what happens in the mountains as a glacier goes down through a mountain valley. What tends to happen in a mountain landscape like the Cascades is that, again, the snow accumulates up at the high surface. This is an Alaska photo, but it's a good representation of what the Cascades might have looked like 12,000 years ago. The snow accumulates up high, packs into ice, and as it flows down, it tends to flow down the pre-existing stream valleys in that landscape. And then the ice is scouring out the valley as it flows through it, eroding the bottom of the valley, eroding the sides of the valley, changing its shape, literally. The most obvious way that we can tell a mountainous area has been glaciated is by the shape of the valleys. Because as the ice flows through the valley, it tends to create a broad, rounded shape to the bottom with steeper sides. This rounded shape is a dead giveaway that the valley has been glaciated. That's what glaciers do to mountain valleys as they scour through them. In an unglaciated landscape, the stream canyons tend to come down to sharp points, not rounded bottoms. So a stream eroded landscape is different than a glacially eroded landscape. Here, for example, across Lake Chelan is Prince Creek. That's not rounded on the bottom. There was no glacier in that valley. But when we come up here into the Railroad Creek Valley, this is Copper Basin. This is the one we see across the valley from sitting up on the Ark or anywhere else in the village. Copper Basin does have that rounded shape to the valley bottom. Copper Basin had a glacier in it. Prince Creek didn't. This is what we see from the village. That's the classic shape of a glaciated mountain valley. And if you look around at any valley around us, they've got that shape to them. Every single valley in this landscape right around the village had a glacier in it. This is up above Heart Lake. So this is Heart Lake looking back down the valley at the village. Here are the tailings here. So this is looking down the valley, and again, look at the shape of that valley. Nice U-shaped, exactly. That's a way to describe it. It's shaped like the letter U instead of the letter V. Broad, rounded bottom. This is farther above Heart Lake. That's still Heart Lake in the distance. Looking down from close to Lyman Lake. And this, again, the upper part of the valley still has that broad, rounded glacial shape to it. This is the Entiat Valley, just on the other side of the ridge. This is over where that little fire is burning, over the next valley to the south of us. And the Entiat Valley has that same rounded shape to the bottom. Every single valley around here on this side of Lake Chelan. This is 10 Mile Creek Valley up above 10 Mile Falls. It's got the same rounded shape to it. This landscape is so obviously glaciated that the Holden map often shows up in introductory geology lab manuals as an example of a glaciated landscape. Now, this is 10 Mile Basin. The waterfall's down here. The 10 Mile Trail and the waterfalls are down here that we see. But when you get up above the waterfall, this is what 10 Mile Basin looks like, 10 Mile Creek. It's got that same rounded shape. What tended to happen is that in these little valleys, you had small glaciers that fed into bigger glaciers. Tributary glaciers feeding into bigger glaciers, just like the little tributary streams feed into Railroad Creek. So there was a glacier in Copper Basin feeding into Railroad Creek Glacier. There was a glacier in 10 Mile Basin feeding into the Railroad Creek Glacier. There was a glacier in the Holden Lake Basin feeding into the Railroad Creek Glacier. But the little glaciers tended not to cut as deeply into the landscape. And once the ice melts away, the valleys of these little glaciers hang up at a higher elevation than the main floor of the valley they feed into. And as a result of this little tributary valley hanging above the main valley, another characteristic of glaciated mountain landscapes is a lot of waterfalls. And we certainly got that around here. That's partly why we call the Cascade Mountains the Cascade Mountains, because they have so many waterfalls. This is Big Creek Basin, Big Creek Valley, just up the next one up from Copper Basin, up the valley, and it's got the rounded shape, again, hanging above the main valley. So all the little tributary valleys are like this. And again, waterfalls are common in this landscape. Now, at the head, the upstream end of every one of these glaciated valleys is a rounded bowl-shaped basin. In fact, in Colorado, the skiers call them bowls. The rounded basin is the source area of the ice. This is called a cirque because of the circular shape, a cirque in geologic terms. This is at the extreme uphill end of the valley. Now, this is a shot from mountains in Utah. The high shadows help to show the shape of the cirque. It's like somebody came along with an ice cream scoop and just scooped out the head of the valley. a rounded bowl-shaped basin right at the uphill end. This is where the snow accumulates. This is where the snow packs into ice. This is the source area, the accumulation zone of the ice. And then it rotates out of that cirque and flows on down the valley. From Alaska, here you see a couple of glaciers sitting in their cirque. So again, we don't see the cirque because it's full of ice, but where the snow is, that's the accumulation zone of this glacier, and then the ice flows out of the cirque and down the valley. Flying overhead a mountain ridge in Montana, here's an example of a cirque. You can see the shape from above. Again, rounded basin, the ice set here, and flowed on down the valley to the lower elevations. This is the Lyman Glacier again, up at the head of the valley. You've got a marmot here for scale. The Lyman Glacier sits in the bottom of a cirque. It's surrounded by one of these bowl-shaped basins. The Lyman Glacier is just a little remnant glacier of the ice that used to totally fill up that cirque. But now most of that ice is melted away except for the Lyman Glacier, but it's in a kind of a shaded spot there up against that ridge. And that's what helps the glacier survive. So this is Upper Lyman Lake and then Lyman Lake, and then it flows down to Heart Lake and on past the village from there. This is Holden Lake. Holden Lake sits in the bottom of a cirque, surrounded by steep walls on all sides. Again, a steep-walled, rounded basin. It's very common to have lakes in the bottom of cirques once the ice is gone, because the bottom of the cirque is kind of scooped out by the motion of the glacier. So that's the Holden Lake Cirque. You can get up on the wall. That's the Mary Green Glacier up above the lake. So when you stand up by the glacier, look down. This is Holden Lake from above. And then it the ice that was in this cirque flowed out into the Railroad Creek Valley into the distance. And of course, the Railroad Creek Glacier eventually hooked up with the still bigger glacier that was in the Lake Chelan Valley, carving out that massive valley. Sometimes you get two glaciers that are in valleys that are right beside each other. And they're separated by a ridge. And this is Martin Ridge, the ridge right behind the village here. Although this is Martin Ridge from the backside, not from the village side. So the village is over the ridge down that way. Martin Ridge was a very narrow ridge between two glaciers. There was a glacier here in the 10 Mile Valley going this way, and the Railroad Creek Valley Glacier on the other side of the ridge. Two glaciers scouring away on both sides of the ridge. And that creates a very narrow ridge. When you get on the top of Martin Ridge, you can kind of see how narrow it is up there. They had ice on both sides of it, and there are places where Martin Ridge just drops off almost straight down for 2,000 feet because it's such a steep slope created by that scouring action. This is a shot from Alaska. It shows, again, a ridge that was between two glaciated valleys. Is another example. Sometimes the peaks here, the higher peaks, were sticking up out of the ice, completely surrounded by glaciers. This is Copper Mountain, right where the mine is, although this is the Copper Mountain from the west side, not from how we see it here in the village. And the top of Copper Mountain would have been above the ice. Unfortunately, I don't have a shot that shows the whole size of Copper Mountain, but the ice here got about this high. And if you go out after this and look up at Copper Mountain, that means in this valley, right where we're sitting right now, there was over 4,000 feet of ice. Not quite a mile thick of ice just in this little Railroad Creek Valley. And when you imagine that much ice grinding through the valley, you can see how it could accomplish quite a bit of erosion. But the peaks here stuck up out of the ice. But it was an extremely cold, harsh climate. And you end up then as with sharp, jagged peaks created by the frost action and the extreme temperatures in that kind of glacial environment. In general, we can say that the effect of glaciers in the mountains is to make that landscape more rugged. our best mountain landscapes, our most dramatic, our most romantic alpine landscapes are the ones that have been glaciated. Because they've got the sharp, jagged peaks and the steep valley walls and the broad, open valleys that we can see for long distances. Those are our best scenic landscapes, the ones that have been thoroughly glaciated, like this one around us. Sometimes these glaciated valleys can be partially full of water. This is Lake Chelan. Lake Chelan is, in effect, a freshwater fjord. It's a glacial valley that's partially full of water. Now, these are more common along the coast of Alaska and the coast of Norway, of course, where it's seawater that floods into the glacial valley. But here we've got freshwater that filled up a glacial valley. As we say, essentially a freshwater fjord. Oops, guess we had that one already. So, as we say, that's how glacial erosion shapes this landscape. And mostly when we look around us, the landscape is dominated by the effects of glacial erosion. Dramatically so. But we could also talk a little bit here at the end about glaciers and glacial deposition. What happens when the glacier melts? So again, we can come back to the Lyman Glacier. We know the ice inside the glacier is flowing, and as the ice flows along, it picks up sediment, it picks up rocks, and carries the rocks along. But when the ice melts, the rocks inside the ice are going to fall on the ground. That's when the deposition happens, during the melting of the glacier. And that can happen in the summertime. Every glacier, remember, melts a little bit in the summertime. But it can also happen over a longer period of time, when the climate's getting warmer and the glaciers are generally retreating. So, another thing to keep in mind is that when the ice melts, you get water. Almost too obvious to bother saying. But that meltwater flows away from the glacier, and that meltwater can also carry sediment out away from the glacier. So we get some sediment deposited directly by the melting ice dumping on the ground, and we get some sediment deposited by the meltwater flowing away from the glacier. This again is the Lyman Glacier from up above, up on the ridges of Dumbbell Mountain, looking down on it. This is the accumulation zone, the melting zone. And in the melting zone, one side of Lyman Glacier has a meltwater lake ponded up there. The other side, the water is just flowing away from the glacier. So we can see different kinds of deposition taking place here. This is again where the ice ends in water. See how muddy the water is? The ice has a lot of very fine sediment inside of it from, again, that grinding action, that abrasion. It's called glacial flour. And when the ice melts, that glacial flour stays in the water for a long time as a fine suspended sediment. It's very common in lakes that have that tip, that the lake almost has a blue-green turquoise color to it. It's an odd color. You're not used to seeing lakes that color. Heart Lake, as the summer wears on, Heart Lake will get gradually more and more blue-green as the glacial melt increases late in the summer. That's because of the glacial flour suspended in the water. Here you see the meltwater flowing away from the ice. That's some metal, some aluminum compounds precipitating out of the water that comes out of the mine. That's the result of the polluted water coming out of the mine. It's not tied to the glaciers, I'm afraid. So another shot, standing on the Lyman Glacier, watching the meltwater flow away from it. That meltwater tends to carry mostly sand and gravel type sediment, and you see the gravel bars here in the stream. But let's go back to the sediment the glacier dumps. We saw this shot earlier of the Mary Green Glacier, lots of sediment in the bottom of the ice. But here in the summertime, the ice is melting and the rocks melt out and fall on the ground. This is sediment deposited by the glacier as the ice melts. It's another part of the Mary Green Glacier. again, sediment rich, especially in the lower layers. Here you can see right at the edge of the ice, rocks partially sticking out of the ice. So here, the rocks are melting out of the ice, getting ready to fall on the ground here. And that happens all summer long. The rocks absorb sunlight once they're sticking out, so the rocks will heat up faster than the ice will, and that will help them to melt out faster than they might otherwise. You can see that a little bit here where there are little pock marks around the rocks as they're starting to fall out of the glacier. Sometimes you can crawl under glaciers. Here is the, again, at the Mary Green Glacier, you can, there's a spot where you can crawl under in through it. Uh-oh, lose the color again. I guess so, sorry. It's a little bit touchy. I apologize.
What makes it lose color there?
It's a bad connection here with the cable that connects it up to the projector. It's just a little bit loose. Now this is under the Mary Green Glacier. I crawled right under it. You can see the water dripping down. You can see sediment that's fallen under the ground under there. So the glacier is constantly depositing sediment. Sometimes if you crawl under glaciers, the sediment gets deposited on you. But you hope it's the little stuff and not the big stuff that falls on you. Now, one of the things that can happen with this summer melting, especially if the glacier stays approximately the same size for a number of years, is that over time, a ridge of sediment can build up right on the edge of the ice. Because the ice is flowing this way, it carries sediment here, melts out in the summertime, and the sediment piles up on the edge of the ice. But then if the glacier melts away, that ridge of sediment still sits there in the landscape, marking the position where the glacier used to be. And that's an important landform. That's called, here it's called a terminal moraine, but more commonly we call it an end moraine. And the moraine is a ridge of sediment marking the place where the glacier used to be. Sediment that builds up along the edge of the ice. This is the end moraine of the Lyman Glacier. The ridge of sediment that piled up on the Lyman Glacier, here's a close-up of it. It's just about 25, 30 feet high. That's where the glacier, that's where the Lyman Glacier was 100 years ago. I've got a photo up in the museum taken 100 years ago showing the glacier right at that position. This is where the glacier is now. I can't even reach it, but way up at the top is where the glacier used to be. Here's that end moraine, that ridge. This was all under ice 100 years ago. It's melted back almost a half a mile. That's how much smaller it's gotten in the last 100 years. And that's true for a lot of our glaciers around North America and around the world. They've been getting smaller for that time period. Sometimes they build little ridges as they're melting back, smaller moraines. This is that little glacier up above Lyman Lake that we pointed out earlier. This is the ridge where that glacier was 100 years ago. So you can see how much that glacier has melted back in the 100-year time since it was at its larger size.
Rick, you said it was melted back a half a mile. How many miles is in width is the glacier or depth?
Oh.
Is it a few or 10?
In width, it's less than a quarter mile wide.
Okay.
Yeah, and in terms of depth, it's in its deepest spot, it might be 400 to 500 feet thick.
But how far up the valley? Say it's about a half, you know, half mile.
At the rate
it's going, how long will it last?
It'll be lucky to go another 30 or 40 years before it's gone completely. This is a bigger end moraine up above Lyman Lake, made by an older glacier. The moraine is now covered with grass and trees. That's one of the ways you can tell it's an older moraine. It's had time to get vegetated. This is an end moraine that's just outside the Lake Chelan Valley, across the valley, across the Columbia River from the town of Chelan. And there was a bigger glacier coming down central Washington, a big ice sheet. Coming down central Washington, got about as far as the town of Chelan, and built this ridge of sediment, marking a position where it used to be. This is the same glacier and the same end moraine that dammed up Lake Chelan.
Wow.
In other words, Lake Chelan was dammed up from a glacier outside the valley, not by a glacier inside the valley. This is that same end moraine area. You can see what the end moraine looks like, kind of hummocky, irregular. Remember, it's just built up by random deposition processes as the ice melts away. So the end moraine will form in this position, and the ice is delivering the sediment to the edge of the glacier. We've got some examples of moraine sediments. This is up by the museum. The road cut as you're going up toward the museum, that's what typical glacial sediment looks like in this valley. So it's not a moraine that extends all the way across the valley because it's partly been eroded away by stream action, but that's what the glacial sediment looks like. This is typical Minnesota glacial sediment. In Minnesota, we had glaciers that covered much of the landscape, much of the state at one time or another. Most of the upper Midwest was covered by glacial ice one time or another. The reason we can tell the glaciers were there is by the end moraines and the sediment they leave behind. There are no glaciers in Minnesota. There are no glaciers anywhere in the Midwest anymore. But we know they were there because of the evidence, the physical evidence they leave behind in sediment layers and in the end moraines. That's how we reconstruct glacial history from that geologic evidence.
Is that end moraine, is that the situation they describe where the boulders are, you can have great big ones and little ones and that sort of thing, they just drop from the glacier.
Yep.
Whereas if they're washed there by rivers, they get sorted out.
Exactly right. Now, the glacial sediment is much more of a hodgepodge of many different sizes. There's no sorting involved. This is more mountainous glacial sediment, more rocky, but same sort of thing. All different sizes mixed together.
Great Lakes.
Yes. In the Midwest, the ice came out of Hudson Bay in Canada. And it tended to follow low places in the landscape. And so the Great Lakes basins before the glaciers were river valleys draining northward. And the ice followed those river valleys and scoured out the lake basins within those river valleys. And then the ice melted away, and gradually those basins filled up with water to make the Great Lakes.
Even the smaller lakes there, I mean the 10,000 or the 15,000 lakes.
Yep. However many lakes Minnesota or Wisconsin or any place else has, that's all the result of a glaciated landscape, the irregularities of that glacial landscape. This is a typical Midwest end moraine ridge running through the landscape, marking the place where the glacier once was. This is another end moraine, again in the Midwest. You can kind of pick it out as a linear feature because it's more forested. The reason it's more forested is that it's hilly and irregular, and so it's more difficult to plow. So the farmers leave that in woodland, and then so this is the ice came to this point, built this end moraine, and then the meltwater washed sediment out away from the glacial front off in this direction. So as I say, in the Midwest, the ice was coming out of Hudson Bay. It's funneled on the west side by the high plains and on the east side by the Appalachians. So the ice came down the Great Lake basins and then down into, in some cases, as far as southern Illinois, southern Indiana, northeastern Kansas even, at one time or another would have been under glacial ice. Again, the lakes would be a common feature in any glacial landscape because of the irregularities in the landscape produced either by the erosion processes or by the deposition process.
I'm from Central California. Wasn't that valley, the Central Valley glacial carbon?
I don't believe so. There were glaciers certainly coming out of the Sierra. And so there would have been glaciers maybe reaching into the Central Valley, but the Central Valley itself, I do not believe, was glaciated.
Because I've heard we have this thing called hard pan. It's terrible, about 3 feet thick, and it's like ocean wave. And I was told that was the result of compacting of the soil by the glaciers as they moved through the valley.
Yeah, I don't believe so, sir. No. I think
that's the way with folklore.
Just trying to skip ahead here. I know we're running short on time. These are some of these Midwestern in moraines. That's partly again how we know where the glaciers were. That there, you had ice coming out of Lake Erie into Indiana and Ohio, ice coming out of Saginaw Bay in Michigan into central Michigan, ice coming out of Lake Michigan, out of Green Bay, out of Lake Superior into Wisconsin or into Minnesota. We had ice coming down the Red River Valley of Minnesota and North Dakota all the way down to Des Moines, Iowa. And again, the reason we know is because these end moraines mark the places the glaciers used to be.
What about Wisconsin Dells?
Well, part of Wisconsin always got missed. There was one chunk of southwestern Wisconsin the glaciers always went around. For some reason, there are highlands there's enough of a highland in west central Wisconsin to divert the ice one way or the other. So the Dells are right on the edge of that unglaciated part of Wisconsin. And it's a weird landscape. It's much different than the rest of the Midwest because it's the unglaciated part of the Midwest. We don't need to go through these, I don't think. So we'll just end with this shot of the Mary Green Glacier. To say, it's a quick look at the glaciers here, and then in a broader sense, what glaciers do to landscapes, and a chance for you to see some of the features to keep an eye out for as you're hiking or walking around. Even if you walk the 10-mile trail, which is a lovely trail, you can see some of these kinds of features in the landscape. And I'll be here all week. I'm happy to answer questions, talk about rocks, talk about the mine, or anything you'd like to know about. Do come up and visit the museum. Part of your stay. Thanks a lot. And it's just about time for Vespers.
Are those primarily your pictures?
They are my photos, yes. Yeah, sure.
But the soil, my question is, how did the soil get so rich on the glacial lake bed? And that's incredibly rich soil.
Yeah, it tends to be the finer texture stuff would have been the lake sediments, and the coarser texture stuff the beach and the glacial sediments. And so
the lake was there a long, long time.
Yeah, and it built up a layer of mud. So where it was covered by lake, that's going to have the finer sediment.
A lot of the pancakes.
There's that, like any lake bed.
I grew up in southern Illinois.
Oh, sure.
And you can see where the glaciers stopped there. And it is the dividing line between the rich soil to the north and then this poor soil that we had.
Right?
Oh, yes.
It was about 20 miles north. It was like an east-west
connection. California.
And driving interstate or some highways. You'll gain about 10 or 20 feet over to like, sometimes just 100 feet. Other times over like maybe eighth of a mile. And you can see a cornfield. It just changes from like kind of light, sickly green, really dark green.
So all of a sudden you hit that. Part of it's the age of the material the soil is made from. The glacial sediments are so much younger and richer in the unglaciated area, older material, more leached out. And
then there's some north north south on the rings there.
Maybe
it's a real flat area. Yeah, there would be some of these hills there where it's now.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Like maybe 5 miles long. Not long. Kind of stretched out. Now 100 feet higher there. It's all gently sloped up. You see it from miles away. There's like a bunch of tree like that. They're all kind of running.
Yeah, same little scooters. You know, the little
3 minutes. Same direction.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I have bad knees.
It's not as exciting as it comes.
Well, I think it's exciting.
Yeah. And it's a real detective story to figure all that out.
Yeah, right.
Go backwards, like with the Chelan and some of the other big glaciers there.
Well, that's part of the fun of it, is the geologic work that you need to do to sort some of that out.
Because I didn't know that there was a really big glacier, and it was the rain from that glacier that kind of stopped up Lake Chelan. That's pretty interesting.